We're holding on Kuf Chaf Dalet on the base by the Mishnah. Mishnah says.
Can you
get
the last line?
Oh, so the last bit we had said before the Mishnah was that we were talking about the case where you have two separate pieces, each a half a kazayas of a novella. If you stick them both on a stick, would you become tameh by carrying them? So Ula had said that not, because only if you're only tameh for tumas masa, only if they could have been picked up together, and like this they couldn't have because they're separate pieces. In other words, the point is, they weren't one piece. So therefore, in other words, like there's nothing that you could do to pick up one that automatically the other one comes up with it. So even if they're on a stick, it wouldn't matter. So we said one possibility is that the case where Rabbi Shmuel rather had said that a person would be tummy master from such a thing would be, or for that matter, the case where the case where we had two half kazaisim on the skin. So we said could be talking about where they're attached by a thin strip of flesh. So therefore, in that case, it does. So they're not completely separate. So that's why Rabbi Shmuel would say he's tummy. We said the same thing with Rabbi Akiva and the two pieces that are on the stick, that we could be talking about they're attached by a thin strip, but if they were completely separate, according to Ula's understanding, maybe in fact you wouldn't be Tomei. And we ended up saying that it's actually a machlokas tanoim, that Rabbi Eliezer is the one who says that they have to actually be attached in order for him to be Tomei, and so that's only according to Rabbi Eliezer. The other Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Eliezer on that point. They don't care whether it's attached or not, as long as it doesn't matter whether they're attached and therefore you pick up one automatically, the other one comes with it or not. So again, if they're on a skin, then Rabbi Shmuel is going to say you are tameh from carrying them because they're not bottled to the skin. Rabbi Akiva is going to say they're bottled, but if they're on a stick, then for sure they're not bottled.
Then
even Rabbi Akiva would say that he's tameh from carrying it. And according to Tosfos, actually that would apply even if they're not on a stick, even if they're not attached at all, according to Tosfos' understanding of Rabbi Akiva.
Because
Tosfos said, once we say that they're one, as long as they're not on a skin, which is mevatel them, then it doesn't matter whether they're on a stick or not. Okay. So the Mishnah said, bottom kuf chaf dalet on the base. Kulis hames, the halacha is not Rabbi Akiva. Kulis hames, a kulis is a thigh bone, but here we're using it generically to mean any long bone, which as the Gemara is going to say has marrow in it. So a thigh bone or any long bone of a mess of a human dead body, which is mekame b'mago v'masa, the kulis hamukdashin, or the thigh bone of an animal of kodshim, hanegeh behen. So that has a tumah d'rabbanon. Once the meat becomes noisier than the bones which are associated with it. Also, the whole concept that noisier makes a person tameh is midrabbanon. Rashi brings from the end of Psachim that explains over there two reasons. Number one, we suspect that there may be koyanim who may leave over the bones specifically so they can have hanah from them. So like this, because the bones themselves you could use for purposes, you could make things out of them or whatever. So therefore we make a gzera that it's tameh in that way. So therefore chashde kohuna it's called. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it happens. You know, Karina may be drizzled, but they're still human beings. They're still subject to sometimes doing the wrong thing. So we make a zera that the bones are tameh, and that way they won't come to leave them over. The other reason is atle kohuna. You have Karinim who are lazy and may not eat it in time. Again, even though Karinim is drizzled, him on the whole, but you know, every rule has exceptions.
The person who's burning it, who has to burn it, become tameh now.
That's true. Well, I mean, well. Yeah, I mean, okay, so he will. I mean, it's only metamim after you die. The Chacham only made it zera that it's going to make his hands tummy. So fine, all he has to do afterwards is wash his hands or tovel his hands or whatever, and he's good again.
They can only be concerned about one person, and that's who will make them zera.
Right, but that's the point. No, so you have these chashke kohuna, you have these afle kohuna, and therefore we make a gzera that therefore the bones of noiser, that therefore bones that were you that are involved with noiser, as the Gemara is going to mention, that have marrow on them or that have noiser on them or whatever, are tomei. So therefore hanegeah behen ben stumim ben nekuvim. So therefore, if a person touches such bones, whether they're sealed shut, whether there's no hole anywhere in the bone, or whether there's actually a hole somewhere in the bone, Either way, tummy, the person is tummy. In the case of if it was a bone from a human being, then it's tummy, because a bone from a person is matame, b'mago v'masa. And in the case of kodshim, as we said, because of this xero of chad, because of chashte kohuna, and because of atle kohuna.
And if the bone doesn't reach the marrow...
What do you mean, doesn't?
It's a hole, I'm sorry, if the hole doesn't reach the marrow...
When we say a hole, we mean a hole that would reach the marrow. But we're saying in this first part of the Mishnah, it doesn't matter whether there's a hole or not, is the point. Even if there's no hole, nevertheless, you're tummy just because... It's a bone from a human being, and that itself is matame, or because the Chachamim made this gzera on bones of noisa. Okay. On the other hand, kulis nevela v'kulis asheretz. On the other hand, if it was a thigh bone from a nevela animal, or a kulis or a thigh bone of a sheretz, so then the only problem is the marrow that might be inside. Actually, we'll see in the Gemara exactly what the problem is, but let's assume for the moment that the problem is the marrow inside, because the bone in and of itself is not matame. Can you call it a bone? It's a bone.
For a sheret?
Again, keep in mind that shrotim, there are several different types. Some of them are mammals, like the cholad is a mouse or a rat or a weasel or some such creature. And some of them are reptiles or amphibians. But whatever, a bone is a bone. What do you mean? Insects are not shrotim. Shrotim are, in general, the various smallish creatures that creep or crawl on the ground. They're in all different orders. Some of them are insects, some of them are amphibians, some of them are reptiles, some of them are mammals. So fine, never mind the insects then, but all the other ones have bones of some kind or other. What's so funny? Okay. So therefore, hanigeya behen stumim tahorim. So if a person touches them while they're sealed shut, then he's tahor because there's no problem with that. He's not touching the marrow of them, and there's no way to touch the marrow because it's sealed shut inside the bone, and the bone itself is not metamic. Mikuvim kol shehu, but if you have any size hole in them, and Rashi says kol shehu means for this purpose, even if the hole is only a hair's width, so that you could just manage to barely stick in a hair from your head or a hair from your beard in there and touch the marrow inside. So yes, to answer your question, it's visible enough that you could conceivably stick a hair in. Then matame v'maga, then it's matame v'maga. If you do end up touching the marrow through that hole, even with a hair from your head or a hair from your beard, then you'd be tummy. How would you know? If you put in the hair and you reach all the way in, b'pashtus you touch the marrow. The question is, minayin sh'asa ma'asa, but how do we know the same din applies then in that case that the same rule applies to maga and masa? Therefore, we mentioned yesterday, we have a hekesh between touching and carrying a nevela. So we learn from that, estra bolachlal maga bolachlal masa, only the kind of tumor where maga is relevant to it, is masa relevant. Loi bolachlal maga, loi bolachlal masa. So we said yesterday, Rabbi Akiva holds of that rule. We discussed yesterday whether Rabbi Shmuel would hold of that rule or not.
So we said there's
two possibilities. Maybe one is that Rabbi Shmuel maybe disagrees with that rule. The other possibility is Rabbi Shmuel would agree with it, but he would say as long as there's any kind of maga, it doesn't have to be that you could touch it from any side, just as long as you're able to touch it from some side. So in this case, applying that over here, if the marrow is sealed up inside the bone, then there's no maga possible. Therefore, you're not tomei tumas masa from it either. If you're able to touch the marrow inside, then already tumas maga is possible because you could stick in a hair from your head or a hair from your beard and reach it and become tummy. Therefore also Trumas Master applies even if you didn't stick in a hair. If you carry that bone, you're going to be tummy because you carried a kazayas of nevela or kazayas of nevela or kadasha of a sheret. Okay, Rashi actually brings up the question, which we mentioned briefly yesterday, why don't we consider the bone a shomer for the marrow? So even if the bone doesn't have a hole in it, why shouldn't he be tomei on the ground? So we mentioned that yesterday, and Rashi says over here, the reason is because a shomer only applies when you're able to get to the tumah itself. You're able to go through the shomer and get to the tumah itself, or around the shomer, or whatever. Here you can't because it's sealed shut. Therefore, the din of shomer doesn't apply.
So if there's a hole, you could call it a shomer then.
That's the point. Therefore, if there's a hole, so now Tumas Maga is conceivable because you could now reach in through that hole and then become Tomei through it. Therefore, Tumas Maga also applies even if you didn't actually put a hair in there and touch anything. Nevertheless, you still you still would become Tomei from carrying that bone. That's the point.
But why did you call it a shomer if there's a hole then?
I don't understand.
You said
one second. Stop. One second. Okay, but here you can reach the truma. Therefore, forget about shomer. Your tome from touching it because you touched it because your tome from touching it. So you're asking why you're asking even if you didn't touch it through the hole. Okay, right, you're right. So you're right. If there's a hole, even though you didn't put a hair through there, you will become tame because then the bone is considered a shomer because then you could have touched it. That's what it is. Okay, you're right. Sorry. Okay, fine. Let's start the Gemara. Negea ein. So we're saying that only if you touch the bone when it's sealed shut, then he's not tame. But the implication seems to be that if we're talking about a bone of a human being, so this first case of our mission, we said kula tames, we said hanegeya behen, if you touch it, whether it's sealed shut or whether it has a hole, then you're tame. So implying avo mahi loy, the implication seems to be that if you only have an oihel involving the bone, then not. And remember, there's three kinds of ways that there can be an oihel. You can have you are overshadowing the source of tuma, in this case the bone. You can have the bone is above you, so it's on top of you, or you can have you're both under one roof. All those three are types of tumas oil. The point is, Tosfos says, usually a bone that's only the size of a grain of barley, esem kesa'ora, is enough already to be metamed b'masa. So therefore, fine. The Mishnah didn't mention tumas masa because there's no chiddush in it. But usually, bones are not metamed b'oil. So therefore, the implication seems to be, if our Mishnah doesn't mention oil, is that this bone is just like any other bone, and it's not metamic. The question is, why not? Heichi domi, what is the scenario? Why is it not metamic of oil? If there is a kazayas of flesh on that bone, oil nami metamic, then it should be metamic of oil as well. And in that case, again, the Mishnah should have bothered to mention that because the Mishnah should have told us. In other words, usually you're not going to become tome ba'oil from a single bone. But here you should realize there's an exception because there's a kazayas of meat on it, kazayas of flesh, and therefore you're going to become tome. Okay, the Gemara says, fine, we're talking to like a kazayas also. Fine, so we have to suppose that the case of our Mishnah is there's no kazayas of flesh on the outside of the bone. Okay, what about, though, continues the Gemara, the id ikka kazayas moyach b'mifnim, suppose, though, that there is a kazayas of marrow inside the bone.
It's a very big, very big bone.
Well, kazayas is not necessarily all that large, but yeah, a big bone, like a thigh bone or whatever, from a human being. No, we're talking about from a human being. But even, no, you talk about a long bone, like you talk about a leg bone or something, there's the total amount of marrow, and it could well be more than a kazayas, yeah. Even by the most generous definition of kazayas, yeah. Okay, so if there's a kazayas of marrow inside the bone, then we should say tumah bekas v'oila. We have a usual rule that in order to block tumah, you need to have an oihel on top of the tumah. If you have an oihel which is at least one cubic tefach, at least one by one tefach above the source of tumah, then it blocks the tumah and the tumah is confined only within that oihel and doesn't spread outside of it. But otherwise, the rule is tumah bekas va'ola. The tumah goes straight up. So you have the tumah is over here. You have it goes straight up in a line from there, as high up as it could go. So if there's a kazayas of marrow inside the bone, you don't have an oihel tefach because the tumah is blocked inside the bone. Therefore, it's called usually in shafts we call it tumah resutza. Later on in our sugya, we're going to mention this concept of tumah ritzutza, a tumah which is squeezed in place. There's no oil above it. A different term that we're going to use later on in the sugya is tumah tumuna. Same difference. Anyway, the point is that tumuna means hidden. Yeah. So the point is that in this case, if the bone has a kazayas of marrow inside, then you should be able to become tame being under the same oil anyway with it, because if you have it inside a room, the tumor goes straight up and then it spreads in the room. Okay, so the answer is so that's the question. Tumor bekaspa oil, but oil nami tame, so you should be tame but oil as well. Again, why doesn't the Mishnah mention that? Okay, the answer is the lucky kazayas moyach is the same. Fine, so we'll say that there's not a kazayas of marrow inside the bone either. Okay. Now we have another question, though.
But if there was a kazayas?
If there was a kazayas, you're right, then it would be tome b'oil. Fine. But now we have like this.
That's only for a bone of a mech.
And we're talking for a bone of a mech. Yeah, a bone of a nevela. There's no such thing as tumas oil for a nevela.
Right. If it's an amputation.
What's the difference? Fine. No, eva menachai, eva menamech, fine. If it's an eva that has boss of a ginim ba'at somis, we learned before, it has basically the same dinim as eva menamech, yeah. There's actually, now that you mention it, actually, there's a medrash someplace that tells a story of a kohen named Yosef HaKohen, who he had to have his leg amputated. So his son is with him in the operating room, taking care of him. Just before this Yosef tells the doctors, just before you finish cutting it off, tell me. And remember, there's no anesthesia in those days. So just before they're finishing cutting it off, they tell him, and he immediately turns to his son and tells him, please go out of here. If they're about to cut it off, it's going to be matame ba'oil, and you're a kohen, you're my son, you're a kohen, you can't become tame. So he still had the presence of mind, even under such conditions, and the medrash says, and the medrash brings out a pasuk, yesh tzaddik over betzidkoi, that you have even a tzaddik, that you have like this Yosef HaKohen is such a tzaddik, that even when he's over, even when he's almost lost, when he's almost losing his life from this operation, he's still betzidkoi, he still keeps his tzidkoi and keeps his wits about him and realizes and remembers the dinim of tumah v'tahara. Anyway, the point is that, yeah, an Eivim and Achai would be matame as well, as long as it has boss of a gidim bab somos, which is. Okay. So now the question is, the Gemara is going to ask like this. We talked about earlier in our Masechta, we talked about in the fourth parak, the concept that, for example, if a bone is broken and you have enough flesh on the outside of the bone, then eventually the bone can knit back together and heal. You also to a certain extent, the same thing can be true also with the marrow. If you have marrow inside, then it can also help things regenerate on the outside. So the question is, if we assume that the Tana of our Mishnah holds that even if you have that marrow on the inside of the bone is able to cause healing on the outside of the bone, because in other words, it's able, the effect of it is able to penetrate through the bone, which does in modern medical terms. You have little holes and little channels and whatever through the bone by which it can operate on the other side. So then Eivah Malyahi. So in that case, we should consider this to be a full-fledged Eivah. Because now Rashi learns that what we're talking about is even if there's no marrow inside the bone itself, still the marrow could conceivably regenerate inside the bone, and then in turn it could, and then in turn, if there's no marrow, because it can regenerate from other nearby bones, let's say. I guess.
Even if it's disconnected.
No, we're talking about while it was still connected to the person.
Oh.
So even though this particular bone doesn't have marrow in it, it could conceivably have regenerated new marrow inside it, and then in turn that would help the flesh on the outside of it regenerate. So therefore, it should be considered an aver, and therefore even if it's less than a kazayis, it should still be metame. Okay, Tosfos says a little differently. We don't have to assume, like Rashi, that the bone has no marrow in it at all. Usually, a coolist, which is one of the long bones in the body, typically has some marrow in it, just not necessarily a kazayis. So anyway, so then we should consider either way. We should consider that it's a full-fledged aver, and it should be matame even if there's no marrow in there at all, according to Rashi, or even if there's less than a kazayis, according to Tosfos. The answer is, so again, ba'oil nami l'tame, so we should say then that it's matame ba'oil as well. Amr of Yehuda Brei Derab Chiyah. So Rabbi Yehuda Brei Derab Chiyah says, evidently, Zoyse Meres, given that the Mishnah is not telling us that it's Metameh Ba'oil in that case, that proves that Moyach Bifnim Eina Ma'ala Arucham Lachutz, that our previous assumption is not actually true. The marrow on the inside of the bone is not going to cause the flesh on the outside to regenerate. So according to Rashi, fine, there's no marrow in it now. Eventually, marrow could regenerate in it, maybe. Or according to Tosfos, there's less than a kazayis of it now. But that's not going to cause that if the flesh on the outside of the bone was torn off, that it should be able to regenerate. That not. Therefore, it's still not considered an Eivah Sholem because it doesn't have boss of a Gidim Bab Somos. Okay. So therefore, so that explains why our Mishnah doesn't mention that it's metame ba'oil, because again, if we're talking about a bone that does not have a kazayis of flesh on the outside and has less than a kazayis of marrow on the inside, or according to Rashi, no marrow at all, then yeah, it's not an aver, and therefore it's not metame ba'oil. It's still metame b'magro v'masa because it is a human bone. But and that in and of itself is matame b'magro v'masa. We in Parshas Parah this past Shabbos we had oy b'etzem adam, but not to the extent of being matame b'oil.
Behemoth
would
be the same story.
Behemoth is nothing to talk about as far as oil. We're talking about tumas oil specifically. We're talking about human remains. Okay, so what are you telling me? So far, you have to explain that the Mishnah is talking about Deleka Kazayas, that you're saying so far that there's less than a Kazayas of marrow inside this bone. Ihachi, well, if so, the Mishnah had mentioned the thigh bone of a mess, of a human mess, and also the thigh bone of an animal of Kodshim, of a carbon, which became nicer. So So why would the bone be tame by mukdashin? The whole concept that the chachamim made the gzera that bones of kodshim once they become noister are mitame your hands is because of the marrow inside them. In this case, which becomes noister. So by the way, I mean with most kodshim, it's not really such an issue because you break them open and take out the marrow. The korban pesach, you can't break open the bones. Therefore, of necessity, the marrow inside becomes noiser. But the question is, less than a kezias is not considered noiser. So why would the chachamim make a gzera in that case that the bone is tamei? And not only that, kulis nevela, kulis hasheres. Let's go on to the next part of the Mishnah. If you're telling me again that all these cases are talking about there's less than a kezias of marrow inside the bone, so how about the thigh bone of the nevela or the thigh bone of the sheres? Kinikwa my matamu. By your logic, why would they be matamu you if they have a hole in them? Because there's no kezias, so there's no kezias of marrow in there. What's there to be matamu you? Okay, strictly speaking, Rav Akiva Eger brings in Gilyon Ashas, brings actually from the Ramban, that the strictly speaking, with a sheriff, the amount would be a kadosh, would be the size of a lentil, which is much smaller than a kezayis. But still, okay, mainly the Gemara is focusing on the nevela. So it's mentioning the sheriff, derech agav, but the same principle applies.
In general, the sheriff has a smaller...
In general, the sheriff has a smaller shear for tumah, yeah. Elsewhere, the Gemara talks about, I think we're going to have it later in our parak, but I don't remember. The reason is because the smallest, the certain shrotim, in particular the choymet, which is a snail or something actually translated as, when it first starts forming and is recognizable as that creature, it's the size of a lentil. So therefore, that's where the chachamim got the shear of a lentil. Okay. So anyway, so the question is... So again, if our Mishnah is talking about there's less than a kezias of marrow inside, then in the case, first of all, why with a bone from kodshim would it be considered tamei d'rabbanan? And why with a bone of a nevela would it be tamei if there's no kezias of marrow in there and the bone itself is not tamei? Okay, the Gemara answers holy kasha. That's not such a big problem. Reisha deleka kezias, say for the ikka kezias. Fine, you could say that the first part of the Mishnah is talking about the case about the human bone. It's talking about there's no kezias, and the rest, the sefer of the Mishnah, the rest of the Mishnah, the mukdoshim and the sheriff and the vela, is talking about there is a kezias of marrow. So in that case, of my kamash malon. So in that case, what would be the chiddush of what the Mishnah is telling us? So it's like this mili mili kamash malon. The Mishnah wants to tell us each statement in our Mishnah is meant to tell us a chiddush that you wouldn't have otherwise realized. Namely, Reisha kamash malon demoyach mufni meni mala rochav lachut. In the Reisha, we were saying there's less than a kezayis of marrow inside the bone, and we're saying that's why it's not matamid oil. That is the chiddush. We were arguing before that if the marrow inside is capable of healing the flesh on the outside, then it should be considered an eva sholim, and it should be matame b'oil. So now we're saying the very fact that the Mishnah tells us that no, or kulas ames, when there's less than a kezias in it, as we just said, is matame b'maga, implying but not b'oil, that's the chiddush. Precisely that point, that you shouldn't think that just because it has some marrow in it, then it's capable of regenerating the whole thing, and therefore it should be considered an eva. So that would be the... If there's marrow inside, if there's a kezias, then the marrow itself is matame. But if there's less than a kezias, that marrow is not capable of causing capable of causing the flesh on the outside of the bone to regenerate. Therefore, it would never have been an eva kibiyasa. It would never have been an eva with bosa beginning by tzomis on it. Therefore, there's no truma. But if the Mishnah hadn't told us that, we wouldn't realize that. We would think that maybe as long as you have a bone with some marrow inside, it should be considered an aver, and therefore it should be matami. Because there's potential to regenerate, and therefore that it would be matami even if it's less than the size of a kezai. So that's exactly what the Mishnah wants to tell us that not.
What about speaking at the beginning of the Mishnah, we mentioned if it has a hole, unless it could build to put it here.
If it has a hole, that's different. In the case of the bone from a person, it doesn't matter. We're saying that whether there's a kezias of marrow in it or not is neither here nor there. A bone itself is metamic. Human bone itself is metamic. But it's not matame b'oil. That was the point we're getting at, is why is it not matame b'oil? So if there's no hole in it, but there was a kezias of marrow, it wouldn't matter. It's a tumor ritzutza, and therefore the tumor is going to penetrate straight up through the bone and to the roof of the house, and then it's going to spread throughout the house.
Let's say, speaking of, there was less.
There was less than a kezias, that's what we said.
So we're all basing this on the assumption that marrow can regrow
No, that's what we said. The chiddush is the Mishnah wants to inform us that it can't. Therefore, less than a kazayas of marrow is not considered significant. A kazayas of marrow by itself
more
is significant. Fine, because that's because the kazayas itself is significant. It's marrow. It's still considered flesh. So therefore, it's metame on its own. Forget about the fact that
because
it
can, the marrow is
because,
itself.
Yeah. Okay. Mukdash in my kamash malon. What does the Mishnah want to tell us by mention? What's the chiddush of the part of the Mishnah that mentions a bone from kodshim? Where, again, let's assume that we're talking, we have to assume that we're talking about that there's at least a kazayas of marrow inside it or on it. Otherwise, why should it be matame? The chiddush would be my kamash malon. Shimush noiser milti. The Mishnah wants to inform us of this idea that the fact that it serves noiser is considered something significant. Namely, da'amam mori baravua amrabi. Askmos kodshim shashimshu noiser, bones of kodshim that were used in service of noiser, meaning, in other words, that there was noiser meat on them or in them. Metaminas yadayim, they metamin the hands. Hoyo v'nafta bosses l'davar osir, because they were a boss, they were base for something which is osir. In other words, the point is Rashi explains that the last Mishnah of Psachim mentions that pigul and noiser are metame a person's hands, but it doesn't say anything about the bones that are with the pigul and the noiser. So that's what Mori Baravua wants to inform us is that even if it's a bone which is sealed shut and you never actually touch the marrow inside, nevertheless the bone is metame because it's esem shishimish es anosa, because it serves the marrow by holding the marrow inside it, and therefore it's metame
without any orifice,
even without any hole in it, right? So that's the chiddush of mentioning mukdashin in our Mishnah, that the chiddush is, once it has a kezayis of marrow inside it, then automatically it's metame on the grounds of the din. Okay. Nevela, what is the chiddush of mentioning the case of nevela in our Mishnah? Again, apagav de ikka kezayis. So the point is, even if you have a kezayis of marrow inside the bone, the chiddush of the Mishnah is, nikra ein loy nikva loy. Only if you have a hole in it is it metame, but maga v'masa. And if there's no hole, then it's not, because as we said in our Mishnah, no maga, then no masa. So each part of the Mishnah, therefore, is telling us a chiddush that we wouldn't have known. By the case of a person, that the marrow, less than a kezayis of marrow inside, is not considered important, and because not malarukh, so it wouldn't have caused flesh to regenerate. Therefore, it's not metame of oil. By mukdashin, once you have a kezayis, then the bone is metame as well. And by nevela, that once you have a kezayis and there's a hole, then you become tame, but no hole and no trum.
Even
if there's a kezayis inside it.
Owned by humans.
Yeah. Okay. Abaya Omer. Abaya says, though, not necessarily. Do we have to say that the first case of our Mishnah is talking about where there's less than a kezayis, and the reason why we would say that's not metame ba'oihol is because there's less than a kezayis, is because that's not going to cause flesh on the outside to regenerate. Abaya says not necessarily. Maybe indeed when you have marrow on the inside of the bone, while the person was still alive, while the limb was still attached, it could have eventually caused the flesh on the outside to regenerate. Ah, you're saying in that case, why is it not considered Eivim and Achai, and it should be Mekame even if there's less than a Kezayis? Because that's the point. We're saying that, no, because we're saying, we're saying you need a Kezayis only if you have, only, you need a Kezayis if you have, if you're not, even if you're not talking about Mala Arucha, forget about the question of whether it can regenerate or not, the very fact that you have a Kezayis would be enough to make it Tumi. But oil, that is. Remember, we're talking about too much oil. Forget maga and masa. We know that the bone itself is metame, but maga over masa anyway. But for oil, either you need a kezayis of marrow, because a kezayis of marrow by itself is significant enough to be metame by oil, or you need that you have a complete aver over here, and then it doesn't matter the size of the aver, no matter how small it is. If you had, let's say, one complete aver, if you had, let's say, for example, a little toe from a baby, then it would be enough to be, because it has both of the gidim ma'atam, it would be enough to be matama even though it's much smaller than a kezayis.
So the kezayis is only important.
So if the marrow is able to regenerate the meat, the flesh on the outside, then it doesn't matter how little of it there is, even if it was less than a kezayis, it would still be considered an eva shalom, because conceivably it could have become an eva shalom. It could have had both of the, well, it has an etzem already, we're talking about a bone over here, and it has marrow on the inside, and eventually it would have redeveloped both on the outside. So if we were to say that way, then the bone of our Mishnah would be metame ba'oil. The point, the fact that our Mishnah says that implies that it's not Matam of oil, we were taking that to mean that A, there's less than a kezias, and B, that what that marrow inside is not capable of making the flesh on the outside regenerate, so you don't have either. You don't have a kezias of marrow, and you don't have Bosa Begidim Batsamas. You don't have a complete Aver. So now I buy.
Therefore,
that's what we concluded, that our Mishnah must be talking about there's less than a kezias of marrow.
But that's not the case.
But, well, that's one answer. That was all one answer from the Stam of the Gemara so far. Or actually, that was Rabbi Huda Bereid Rabchia saying that. Okay, Abaya Omar. Abaya says I have a different way of explaining the situation. We can say that marrow inside the bone is capable of regenerating flesh on the outside. You're asking that in that case, then it shouldn't matter how little marrow in there is there, even if there's no marrow in there, according to Rashi, or only a little bit according to Tosfos, it should still be considered an Eva Sholim. But we have to be talking about the case over here of our Mishnah is B'Sheshofa, if he sanded down the bone. Once he scraped or sanded down or whatever the bone, then the marrow inside would not be, if that had been done, again, while the person was alive, then the marrow already wouldn't have the ability to, it wouldn't be able to regrow like that, right?
Or regrow the flesh.
It wouldn't be able to, right. The Chidr of Elazar, and this would be like what Rabbi Elazar says, the Amar of Elazar, Kulis Sheshofa, if you have a long bone like that, that you scraped it down, La'urka Tmeya, if you did it along the length, one long strip, let's say, or several long strips along the length, so you still have some places along the length where you have a complete strip that was not sanded down, Tmeya, then it's still Tomei, because in that particular place, it still could have been Mal Arucha. It still could cause the flesh on the outside there to regenerate. L'rochba Tahora, but if you did it widthwise, even if you did only one strip around it in one place, then Tahora. Then it would be Tahora because... In a circular around the bone, because then in order for it to be able to reheal, it needs to be able to go from end to end. So once you cut around the middle of the bone, it scrapes around the middle of the bone, it breaks off that right. In modern terms, and in modern medical terms, you have a bone has a very thin network of blood vessels on the outside of it that's what causes this regeneration, and therefore if you cut around it, then all of those blood vessels have been broken. The simonach and the way to remember this is in dikla. Think of how it is with a palm tree. If you cut off or any kind of tree for that matter, if you cut off strips of bark from along the length of the tree, no problem. The tree will still continue to survive. But if you cut around the width, then you'll kill the tree because the sap can't rise.
If you cut off the bark around the width of a tree, in a ring around the width of a tree, around the
circumference of the tree, it's going to kill the tree. That's So as opposed to if you do it in a long strip along the, then it won't, right? So it's the same thing with a bone. Okay. So therefore, Sal Baya says that's another way of explaining our Mishnah. There is less than a kezias of marrow in it. And let's say that marrow is capable of making the flesh regenerate, but because over here on top of that you sanded down the bone along in one place along the whole circumference, then already it loses the marrow loses its ability to be mala arucha, and therefore again unless you had a kezias of it, it doesn't mean anything. Okay, Rabbi Yochanan says here is another way of explaining it. La'olam de'ika kezias. We are talking about that our Mishnah is talking about where there is a kezias of marrow inside the bone. So not like the first two explanations where there was less than a kezias. And we will say moyach mufnim mala arucham lachutz. And as a matter of fact, the marrow on the inside is able to regenerate flesh on the outside. So therefore, it would be considered a full aver. So what does the Mishnah mean when it says with this kulis ames that if a person touches it he becomes tummy? What does the word touching over here mean? It means overshadowing. It means being under an oil with it. As we'll see soon, the Gemara will explain where we see that an oil can be described as negea, as touching. We'll get to that soon, but Rabbi Yochanan is going to explain our Mishnah that way. Okay, so the question is, in that case, the moyach mufnim mala arucha. Okay, but if the marrow inside is able to regenerate flesh on the outside, then kulos nevela, kulos hasharetz, kile nikra mai tahorim. So why is it, why are we saying in our Mishnah that a bone from a nevela or a sheretz, if there's no hole in it, why are they tahor? We should still consider that eventually you're going to have a limb over here, which is bas of a gidim batzamais, and again, a whole limb by itself is able to be metame. the mago of masa, fine, not the oil.
With marrow?
Well, yeah, we're talking about if there's marrow inside, yeah. Or the question is, again, the bone itself is an aver, so therefore, so what? Who cares whether it's sealed shut or not? Either way, it should be considered a full aver because eventually it would regenerate on the outside. The answer is Amar ben Yamin bar Gidol, Amar Rav Yechanan, Hocha Maya Skinen, Kugan Deikka Zayis Moach Hamaskashkish. We're talking about over here that the marrow that is inside the bone is not healthy marrow anymore. It's dried up. Literally miskashkish means that it rattles around. So in other words, it's dried up. Yeah. You have an expression in the Gemara, for example, I don't remember now where it is. Istirable agina kish, as in Bava Masih, actually, I think, istirable agina kish kish carrier, that you have one istira, one coin inside a jar, rattles around a lot. A couple of different explanations of what it means. One explanation, Rashi says over there, it means like when you have a family that's all Amir Oret, and you have one Tamar Chacham in the family, then like he makes a lot of noise and calls a lot of attention to himself, whereas if the whole jar had been full of coins, then it wouldn't make so much noise. So, yeah. Anyway, the point is, kish kish means noise. It means noise rattling around. The hero, also, miskash kish means that it rattles around. So the point is, in other words, we're not talking, it's not healthy marrow anymore. It's dried up. So it's inside the bone still, but it's rattling around in there. So gabe mess. So when it comes to a mess, it doesn't matter. So in other words, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that marrow on the inside is able to regenerate on the outside, but he's talking about when it's healthy marrow. So then we would say that, yeah, if there was a kezias of healthy marrow that was attached to, that was firmly attached to the bone inside there, then, yeah, with an avela or a sheretz, it would also be metallic.
Which is true medically. So having a piece of marrow inside a bone would regenerate all the stuff.
Not all, but it regenerates enough for it to be able to be considered an aver. There's no minimum amount.
That's when the person's alive, not when he's dead.
No, but we're talking about it would have been able to while he was alive or while the animal was alive or whatever, and therefore it has this effect there. Right? So in other words, so if we're talking about if there was healthy marrow in there, then it's true. Our Mishnah would not be distinguishing between a bone from a human being or a bone from a nevela. Either way, once you have a kezias in there, it would be metame. In the case of a person, just because you have a kezias in there, and in the case of the animal, because it would regenerate, and it would be considered an aver sholim. The reason why our Mishnah is making the distinction is because we're talking about the marrow is dried up. So, gabin mes tuma bakas va'ola. So when it comes to a bone from a mess that has this dried up marrow in there, doesn't matter whether the marrow can cause anything to regenerate. You have a kezias of marrow in there. That itself, kezias of marrow itself is a source of tumah. So therefore, the tumah extends up through the bone and goes into the house, and there's metame. Anybody? Yeah, we're talking from a mess. Yeah. Gabit nevela, on the other hand, when you come to a bone of nevela that has this dried up marrow in it, kiven de miskashkashu, since this marrow is dried up and rattling around in there, then therefore it doesn't have the same shivas. It wouldn't be able to cause any regeneration. Therefore, nikva ein lo nikva loy. So only if it has a hole, then you would have been able to. Then you would be able to touch the marrow through the hole. Doesn't matter. It's still considered flesh. So therefore, it could be metame only if it has a hole, lo nikva loy. But if the bone doesn't have a hole, then it can't be metame.
Why would you consider the marrow
miskashkesh? That's dried up.
Yeah, would still produce.
No, it wouldn't. That's the point.
That's
the point. It's not that it would produce tumor. Regeneration. No, but it would produce tumor because the marrow by itself is a source of tumor. Even when it's dried up, what's the difference? It's still flesh from the animal.
It's old man.
Okay.
It's what?
It's still considered flesh. Well, here we're talking about an avela, but yeah, it's still flesh from an old animal, but whatever. Yeah, it's still flesh. That would be metame. Bones are not metame. Bones from an avela are not metame, but flesh is, and this is flesh. It's dried up, okay, but it's still flesh. Omer of Ovin, the Tamer of Yosef bar Ovin, said of Ovin says, or some say of Yosef bar Ovin said, Afanan nami tanena. As a matter of fact, this idea that Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that when our Mishnah says negea, it really means oil. So in that, we actually see a Mishnah that expresses the same idea. You have a Mishnah in Olos that goes like this. If a person touches a half kezias of a mess, of a human mess, and at the same time he's also overshadowing another half kezias,
leaning over, or
he's touching a half a kezias and at the same time another half a kezias is hanging above him and overshadowing him.
Combined?
Above him. Either way, Tommy.
The time goes down?
No, the point is, a half kezias by itself is not enough to be metame. But we're saying that if you have a half kazayas over here, and you have another half kazayas hanging down from the ceiling over here above him, so he's touching the one half and he's underneath the other half, the two halves combine together and he becomes tum.
Oh, the tum would be like oil?
Yeah, because if you have a half of it, yeah.
Because his hand is on one.
Right.
And
so
the
point is, Iyam at the Shlema Chad Shmahu. So Rav Oven or Rav Yosef Oven is saying like this: if you're going to tell me that touching and overshadowing oil are considered basically the same thing, well then Mishra Malchim is static. Sure, that explains why they would combine together. Why not? Yeah, I'd say it's the same thing as if you're touching the half of Kazayas with one hand and touching the other half Kazayas with the other hand. For sure, you become Tommy. But if you're going to tell me that it's considered two different types of tumah, negea and mile are considered two completely different things, mimit starav, how would they combine? V'hatnan, that Mishnah continues, zafal, the general rule is, kol shu m'shem echad, anytime you have one type of way of becoming tumah, mitzdarif, then it combines together, the tumah m'shnei shem is tahor. But if you have two different ways of becoming tumah, then they can't combine together. It's not a machlokes tanaim. So therefore, obviously, the Mishnah must be implying that negeya and mahil are all considered together under the same category. They're both considered negeya. Therefore, the two parts can combine.
Right.
Because so otherwise, it wouldn't work. So therefore, so that proves Rabbi Yochanan's point that in our Mishnah also negeya can really mean mahil.
Same thing, really.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Above two or four.
The problem with that is Elamai Chad Shmahu. So what are you telling me then? You're telling me that Oihel and Negea are considered basically the same thing, and therefore they can combine together. Ema Sefer, but look at the next part of that Mishnah. Avo HaNegea B'Chachafi Zayis. But the Mishnah continues, if a person is touching a half Kazayis, the Dover Acher Ma'al Olavah Kachafi Zayis, and something else is overhanging over him and the other half Kazayis, Tahar, then he would be Tahar.
That's a contradiction.
No, so in other words, when we said, well, no, that's the question. So when we said before, Negeya B'Chachafi Zayis or Ma'al Al-Kachafi Zayis, actually Rashi says what it means, Rashi, yeah, so let's say, for example, the first case of the Mishnah was like this. Let's say he's touching the half Kazayis with one hand, and he's putting his other hand over the other half kazayis. No, one time. That's mile. Then there's chatzi zayis, mile olav. Rashi gives an example. Actually, let's say it's stuck on a stick, which is stuck into the wall, and a person stands by the wall underneath that. What would dover acha mile olav would mean? Would mean, let's say, for example, so he's touching a half of kazayis. You have another half kazayis on the floor next to him with a roof over him and that half of kazayis. The second part of the Mishnah is saying he's not Tomei. So therefore, you see that Oihel is not the same as Negea necessarily. The Ichad Shmahu, so if you're going to tell me that Negea and Ma'il are all considered one type of thing, a Mai Tahar, why would he be Tahar in that last case? They're under the same oil.
So one's in his hand, the right hand, and the other one, he's covering it.
So let's say, for example, the last case would be, let's say, for example, that you have, he's standing by the doorway, let's say, you have a half kazayis is outside the door, so he's reaching out his hand and then touching that one. Meanwhile, he's standing inside the house. In that house is a half of kazayis on the floor, and that half kazayis are under the same roof. So the Mishnah is saying he's not Tomei in that case. He's Tar. So in that case, you see that oil is not like Negea. Okay, so the question is Elakasha Nesha. Okay, so what are you going to, if you're going to tell me that Oihel and touching are considered two different things, which you need to in order to explain the last part of the Mishnah, then you're back to the question, how you're understanding the ratio of the Mishnah. Why would you be Tomei if you're touching one piece over here and overhanging your hand over the other piece over there? Why would you be Tomei? It's Maga and Oihel.
Your hand is considered an Oihel.
Yeah, as long as it's Tefach wide. Tefach al Tefach Barum Tefach. Or actually, no, that's Tomei. Yeah. Amud of Zera, sort of, and actually, I don't even think you need that necessarily, because since if a tumah is not under an oihel, again, tumah bekas for oil, bekas for yeredes, the tumah just goes straight up. So in that case, even if you don't want to consider his hand an oil, fine. Nevertheless, the tumah goes from that half of his eyes and would go straight up to his hand. But yeah, no, in this case, the pashtus we're talking about that his hand would be considered oil, so it's a tefach. That's the question. So we see have a contradiction between the two halves of the Mishnah. One half implies that Oihel and Maga are considered the same thing. They can combine like this. And the other one is implying that they don't combine if it's one here and one here and then a roof.
When he puts his hand on top of the piece of meat, he's doing two things. Maga?
How is he touching it? No, he's not touching it. He's
said it goes up.
Okay, but A half of well, that's basically what the Gemara is going to answer, is that okay, so one second. But right now, we don't know that point yet. Right now, we're assuming that oil is oil. Yeah. The answer is, Omer Abzera, the Tumor Ritzutza Ben Beis Migdola Maskin. We're talking about a case where the half Pizayas is, where the half Pizayas is Ritzutza, again, mean Ritzutza literally means like squeeze, meaning there's less than a Tefach al Tefach al Rum Tefach above it, Beis Migdolin, Askinon. We're talking about where it's Ritzutza between two cabinets, between two wooden cabinets. The Ein Beinein Paseach Tefach. There's no space of a Tefach between them. Now, if there had been a space of a Tefach between them, then fine, you have a Tefach by a Tefach, you have at least a Tefach by a Tefach of space, because you have a Tefach of space between the two cabinets, you have a Tefach of space, you have, the length is definitely more than a Tefach, the height is also definitely more than a Tefach, therefore, if you had an oihel, if you had something on top covering the space between the two cabinets, then good, the Tumah is going to be limited inside that space. But because it's Tumah Ritzutza, because you have less than a Tefach between the one cabinet and the other, therefore it doesn't matter how wide the space is, or how long the space is, or how tall the space is. You need a Tefach in each of the three dimensions, and here you don't have that. Therefore, it's considered Tumah Ritzutza,
length,
width, and height, right? So you need, therefore, if you need a Tefach in each space, Dekola Negihi. So therefore, even if you're far above the flesh, you're talking about, let's say, for example, they're very tall cabinets, nevertheless, it's still considered like you're touching them. Because again, since Tumah Ritzutza Bekas Va'ola, so it's as if that whole space is full of Tumah. So it's not necessarily, so again, if there was a space over there enough to be able to construct an oil Tefach, al Tefach, al Rum Tefach, then that would be different. Then if you were to cover over that part with your hand or any other part of your body, it would be tumas oil. But like this is not considered tumas oil. Like this is considered as if that whole space between the cabinets is completely full of tumah, right? Because less than a tefach. Therefore, when you put your hand on top, it's as if you're touching the actual tumah. So nothing to do with oil versus maga. You could say maga is maga, oil is oil. Never the twain shall meet. But in this case. Not because the piece of flesh is so small, it has to be at least a kazayis. But we're talking about that because the space that it's within is less than a tefach.
That's
the point. So nothing to do with the size of the piece. It has to do with the size of the space.
Like trapped in the bone
between the two cabinets.
Give me two of those.
The bone itself.
No. Forget the bone. Now we're talking about a separate piece of flesh. So you have two cabinet skin over here, less than a tefach apart. You have a piece of flesh in between over here. So therefore, because you don't have an oil tefach, therefore if you put your hand up here, it's the equivalent of maga. It's as if this whole space was full of tumah. As opposed to if there was a tefach wide space and you put your hand above it, that would be classic tumas oil.
So you have one type of tumah here.
That's the point. So therefore, no proof for Rabbi Yochanan that oihel and maga can be considered the same thing, because maybe that's the case that the Mishnah is talking about, where you have where you're touching one and overshadowing the other one. Why are you tell me when you're touching one and overshadowing the other one? Because the one that you're touching, the other one that you're overshadowing in this case, you're also considered as if you're touching. Because you have two murder books over here.
And with the case where it says tar,
the case, that would be a case. So in other words, we would say that if you have Tumas Oihel and Tumas Maga, they don't combine together. But in the case of the two cabinets, Tumas Oihel
right.
and Tumas Maga don't combine. A half tefach, a half tzayis in one and a half tzayis in the other don't combine. But over here, what you have is this case with the two cabinets is not Tumas Oihel, it's Tumas Maga. It's considered as if you're touching the actual Tumah.
Because it's in a space
that is not an oil.
Right.
It's in a space that is not an oil.
Right.
And therefore, yeah. The Rambam, by the way,
logic, Tumah Ritzutza can never combine with Tumah Soyo, can it?
That seems to be what the Gemara is saying, yeah. So no proof for Rabbi Yochanan's din yet, though. By the way, the Rambam learns this case of the cabinets a little bit differently. The Rambam learns that you're talking about not the cabinets are horizontally next to each other, the way Rashi learns. The Rambam learns that it's talking about one cabinet on top of the other one, and the legs of the top cabinet are short, so there's no space of a tefach between the bottom cabinet and the top one. Similar idea, though. The point. In other words, you have the bottom cabinet, then you have the top cabinet on top of it with a space of less than a tefach. You have the half kazayis here, and therefore we're talking about a person who's standing on top of the top cabinet is going to become tall. Right. If at the same time he's touching the other,
it's more of a safer thing.
Then he won't, right? Because then they're right.
Right. Separate from
well, you. The truth is actually that's not so simple because it actually, strictly speaking, it depends on the size of the cabinet. If the cabinet is not large, if the cabinet is small enough that it's Macabre Truma, then it actually wouldn't work as an Oihel because a Kali that's able to be Macabre Truma is not Choytis. So let's not get into that. That's a whole other matter. But yeah. Okay. Fine. Okay. However, still, maybe we can still use Rabbi Yochanan's explanation because we can say, "Man Tana Dekori LaOil Negeya." Which Tana do we find that if Rabbi Yochanan is going to tell us that our Mishnah, that when it says Negeya means actually Oihel, real Oihel, not like this case of Tumur Sutta that we're talking about, which Tana would be saying that? Rabbi Yosi. Apparently, so the answer is Rabbi Yosi. So that would be according to Rabbi Yosi. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yosi Oimer. Maloy tarvat rokov, a large spoon or ladle full of rokov. Rokov is when you bury a person. After a while, the body turns to dust, and that dust, the rokov literally means decayed substance. So that's what it is. Strictly speaking, you have actually the concept that maloy tarvat is of in its matame is halacha moshe misina, but the Gemara actually explains in Nozir. Now you have to have a number of criteria in order for there to even be a din of rokov. There can't be any other decayed substance mixed in with the substance of the mess himself. So if he was buried in tachrichim as a mess usually is, then there would be no such thing as rokov. If he was buried in a wooden coffin, it would have to be not even on the soil, because then the soil itself gets mixed in with it. It would literally have to be that the body was buried without clothes in a coffin that's not going to decay. Like a coffin made out of marble or glass or some other kind of basically indestructible material. Yeah. So then you have this concept of rock.
It's very hard.
Yeah, it's not a usual case, okay. But there is such a concept. And halacha moshe misinai is that maloy tarvat rokov, a ladle full of this rokov. Rabbi Yosi says matamu b'magol b'maso. Tarvat means a ladle. A large spoon, like a soup ladle or something. It was a known shear in their time. I think the Gemara talks about someplace that's the size of like two cup cans or something, but don't quote me on that because I don't remember if that's correct. Okay, anyway. So Rabbi Yosi says matame b'mago v'maso of oil. So this rokov is matame b'mago v'maso of oil. So let's consider bishlema b'maso of oil. I can understand why it's tomei with tumas masa, because you carry the whole thing at once. Over oil, same thing, because you're under an oil with it at the same time. Because you're carrying the whole thing at once, or you're under an oil with the same thing at once. Ela negeya, but you have to ask, according to Rabbi Yosi, why would he be tomei from touching it? Hala noga bakula, he didn't touch the whole thing at once, because it's a bunch of little pieces that are not connected together. It's impossible to touch the entire maloy tarvat at one time. And by the way, even you have in other Gemaras, it talks about the idea. Even let's say you were to take, for example, you were to take water or some other liquid and knead it with this rokov to make like a clay stuff, it still wouldn't work. Ein chibur e'adim chibur. Connecting it together by human means is not considered a connection. So that's the question. Why would...
Also found naturally?
Because it doesn't matter. Because
say drash stone.
Doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. The point is that rokov is considered, it's not considered joined together. It's not joined together, and no matter how it gets joined together after it became rokov, it doesn't help. So the question is, according to Rabbi Yosi, why would it be mitame b'maga? El olav shmamina mai negeya maga. So obviously you have to say that Rabbi Yosi over here, when he says maga, really means maga. And therefore, so that would explain it. Sure, it can be considered an oil. Okay, the problem with that is Valkatoni Negeya, Valkatoni Mahil. What do you mean? How could Negeya possibly mean Mahil? He uses the two terms separately. Abaya says like this. If you put your hand over it and your hand is within a tefach of it, then we call it an oihel negia. Then we call it, it's sort of like it's in between. Your hand is an oihel, but because it's within a tefach of the thing, it's considered as if you're touching it. Sort of. If you have your hand above it, more than a tefach above it, then it will just be considered oihel greater, just a plain oihel. Meaning, in other words, now, Rashi explains...
It can be both, less than a
right.
tefach.
Yeah. So therefore, so that's the case. So when he says so that this is we're explaining Rabbi Yossi, but we're trying to say that our Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Yossi. But that the term in our Mishnah Negeya that Rabbi Yochanan is saying means Mahil would be according to Rabbi Yossi, that Rabbi Yossi would distinguish between different types of oihel, whether your oihel hand is within a tefach of the thing or not. Now Rashi learns that Abaya would still say this doesn't work. Abaya would still say this doesn't work according to Rabbi Yochanan, because we still have the fact that because the fact of the matter is we started our Mishnah saying that apparently the implication is that the bone is not metamed ba'oihel, and we asked why not, and that got us into this whole discussion. Abaya himself explained before that we're talking about there was less than a kazayas of marrow over there, and then you sanded down the bone. So now he's not trying to explain the Mishnah according to Rabbi Yochanan, because he disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of our Mishnah. He's just trying to... Abaya himself, in the sugya before, gave a different explanation for our Mishnah, not like Rabbi Yochanan that we're talking about, there is a kezias of dried up marrow in there, etc. Abaya had learned before that we're talking about there's less than a kezias, and then you sanded down the bone. So therefore, Abaya is not here to explain how Rabbi Yochanan would understand our Mishnah. Abaya is just here to explain what does Rabbi Yossi mean when he says that you could be that you could become Tomei from Rokov through Maga. So Abaya is saying because of the type of oihol which is considered Maga, because your hand was within a step of it. So that's Abaya. Rava Omar. Rava says you don't need that. No, you could even have a case where his hand is above a tefach from the thing and it's still considered oihol Nagia. The Heichi Domi Oyo Greda, so what according to Rabbi Yossi would be considered a plain oil would be Baham Shocha when you have something else that is bringing the trauma between him and it. In other words, we would say like this. Rabbi Yossi is not saying that if you actually touch the Rokov, you're going to be Tomei. Because the fact that you can't possibly touch the whole Tarvad at once because it's a bunch of small pieces. What Rabbi Yossi is saying when he uses the expression Maga, Masa and oil, so Masa is very obvious what it means you carried it. Maga would mean that you put your hand someplace above it. Doesn't matter, says Rava, whether it was within a tefach or above a tefach. Either way, that's considered Maga.
That's not a Baya.
That's not Baya said not. But Rava is saying that either way, that would be considered Maga. What does Rabbi Yossi mean by oil when you have it, when you're in the same room or under the same overhang as the Targad Rokov? So the Targad Rokov is on the floor, on the table or whatever next to you, and you have a common roof over both of you. That's what Rabbi Yossi would call oil. That's what Rabbi Yossi would call oil, according to Rabbi. Whereas if you use your hand to overhang it, then it would be considered oil negia. That is, the mechanism of tuma is through tumas oil, but Rabbi Yossi calls it negia. Rabbi Yossi calls it oil negia, an oil that's brought about by touching.
As if it touched it.
Okay. Omar Rabbi.
Not stronger
for
the oil or for touching.
Right. But just when Rabbi uses the three terms, maga, masa, and oil, so Rava says that's what it means. He doesn't mean that if you actually touch it. He means putting your hand over it versus having a common roof over you in it. Okay. Omar Rava, manah min Allah. So Rava says, where do I get this idea that even if you have your hand more than a tefach above the tumah, Rabbi Yossi would call it oihol negia, meaning, in other words, that the mechanism of the tumah is through tumas oihol, but we call it as if it was touching. Where do I get that from? So like this, it's Tanya, really, because it's a braisa. Rabbi Yossi, Omer, chavile mito usrige chalonis, the ropes of a bed. Beds in those days were made, we find in many places in Shas, they were made out of a frame, and then they would weave ropes back and forth through it to make like a cross-hatched pattern, and then they would put the mattress on top of it. Yeah, I suppose. So those and window screens. So those kinds of things, so they make a chatzitza between a house and an upper floor. So meaning, in other words, if we're talking about, it was a very common thing in those days that you would have a house and above it you would have a second floor and there would be a trap door, there would be an opening or a skylight between the first floor and the second floor. You have many mishnayos and mesechta, all those, for example, that deal with such scenarios. When the trauma does spread through the hole, when it doesn't, etc. So here what you have is, let's say, so if you took if you took this, if you took this bed with the ropes, woven through the frame, or you took the window screen and put it over the hole, then it would block the tumah from coming into the attic, because Rashi says, even though they have holes in them, no hole is the size of a kevlar, and therefore you need. The space between one rope and the next in the bed is less than a tefach, and the space between the holes in the screen is also less than a tefach. Therefore, it'll block the tumah from coming in.
In order for tumah to
go from one place to another, you need a minimum the size of a tefach. Actually, Rashi explains there's actually several different cases. For example, if you have a hole in a wall, for example, that you made in order to get fresh air into the room, then actually it needs to be larger than that in order for tumah to be able to come into the house. Then the hole needs to be the size kimloy egroy, which literally means the size of a fist. But the Mishnah actually explains in Kalim it means the size of the fist of Ben Batiach. The nephew of Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai, he had a gigantic fist which was the size of the average person's head.
He was the one who
sneaked the Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai out of Yerushalayim, right?
Why don't you say that there's a tumah ratzutza here
for pleasure? No. Hold on. We're talking about there is tumah inside the house on the bottom floor. So it's not a tumah ratzutza because the house is much bigger than tefach al tefach al rum tefach. But the question is the tumah going to go through that skylight and be mekame the things on the second floor as well? So if you put this bed or you put this window screen on the hole over the hole, then the tumah is not just all over the floor; it goes all the way up to the ceiling. But it gets stopped at the skylight because it can't go through holes smaller than a tefach.
Then you save the second floor.
Basically, it's not so simple because you have dinim d'oraisa about it. But let's not again.
The second floor, just where the bed is.
No. Everywhere else, the second floor has a floor anyway. The second floor has a floor, right? The floor of the second floor is the ceiling of the first.
It's just under the
if there was no opening, then the second floor would for sure. So in this case, it's considered as though there was no opening because you have something blocking the opening because you have less than a tefach.
The bed is under the opening.
Yeah, well, no, directly above the opening, rather, we're talking about, yeah. We're talking, you brought up the bed to the attic, let's say, and you spread it over the hole before the mess died downstairs, let's say. And now you've saved the second floor. So therefore, choytzin ben abayis l'aliyah. So they block between the first floor and the second floor. Shelo lahachnis tumah l'tzad sheni. So that way, it doesn't bring in tumah into the second side.
It doesn't spread
to the second floor. Then he continues. Person al pnei ames ba'aver. Suppose now a different case. Suppose you took the ropes as they are woven like that in that cross hatch pattern, and you spread it outdoors over the mess. So does it become tamei from the mess? And so so what happens is hanegeya kneged hanekev tamei. So now if a person touches. The opposite the hole, in other words, above the hole, then he's tummy, because then he himself is an oil ala mess. In other words, the case that we were saying before is you had the mess on the first floor, and the tumah is not going to go through the hole smaller than a tefach to go to the second floor. But here, if you have a mess lying outside, and you have this screen stretched out over him, and you reach in and then stick your hole and stick your finger on, and put your finger, let's say, on top of one of the holes, then you're going to be tummy because you yourself are now being an oil over the mess. You yourself are overshadowing the mess through
with
the hole.
Finger?
Yeah, even it, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't...
Finger is considered an oil?
Yeah, because it's directly above the mess, yeah.
Even though your finger's going between...
Even though your finger is...
Less than
yeah. Because you are being mild on the mess, yeah. On the other hand...
So the finger is less than a
dime. No, it doesn't matter. Any amount, you yourself are now being mile ala truma. Your finger is directly over the truma, therefore you become tummy by way of your finger.
So Katie, that's an OL, you need a dimension.
Right.
But a human part of the body doesn't.
Right. Shaloi kenegan on nekev tahar. On the other hand, if you were to touch the parts that are not the holes, the ropes themselves are not makabel tumah without the bed. Therefore, if you touch the ropes, you're not going to be tumah. So now the point is, Hechidomi. So what's the scenario? Ilema lamata mitefach. If you're saying that you spread out these ropes above the mess and they're within a tefach of where they're not within a tefach of each other, within a tefach of the mess, they're less than a tefach above the mess. Well then, shaloi kenegan anekava, my tahor. Why should you be tahor if you touch the ropes? If you didn't touch the part over the holes, mess b'ksusayhu. This is the equivalent. It's the equivalent of having a mess dressed in his clothing. A body is metame when it's dressed in clothes. You don't say that the clothes block the tumah from going out, because the clothes are bottled to the person. So why shouldn't the ropes be bottled to the mess over here if they're within a tefach of him? Evidently, we're talking about the ropes are spread out more than a tefach above the mess. And Rav Yossi is using the expression hanegeya, if a person touches kenegan anekev tumah and shalai kenegan anekev tahor. So we see that. So we see that being over it can be considered negeah. So there you go. Says Rava. So you see from that Rav Yossi makes a distinction. Rav Yossi is not making a distinction between within a tefach and above a tefach. Even if it's above a tefach, which we say it has to be, because otherwise it would be bottled to the mess anyway. If you're touching the ropes, so you're touching the space between the ropes. If you touch the space between the ropes, how are you becoming tummy? The mechanism is tumas oil. But Rabbi Yossi is using the expression hanegeya, that if a person touches kenegan anekev. So we see from that Rabbi Yossi is calling, that's the point. Not that tumas oil and negeya are always the same, but in other words, that there's a type of oil, namely where you yourself are the oil, which Rabbi Yossi is calling by the word negeya, which is what Rava is out to prove. Even if that's, yeah.
That's according to Rava.
That's what Rava is saying. Evidently, that's what Rabbi Yossi is saying. Amar Abaya, Abaya says that's not a proof. For olam lamasa mitefach, we can say that actually the ropes are spread out within a tefach of the mess, within a tefach above the mess. Or the kamet mess would still say. You're arguing in that case. Why are the ropes not bottled to the mess? They should be just like the clothes of the mess. The difference is mess would still say mevatolay. The difference is you mevatol the clothing on the mess. You plan to leave them in those clothing. Right, but the point is, on the other hand, hailo mevatol. Here, you're not planning to be mevatol those ropes. You only have them there temporarily. So therefore, even if they're within a tefach above the mess, then they're not bottle. So they're not considered the clothes of the mess. So yes, we could be saying that Rabbi Yossi is talking about that you have, here is the mess, and you have the ropes within a tefach above them. And that's where Rabbi Yossi is using the expression where you touch the space between the ropes. So you touch the ropes themselves. He's talking about within a tefach. Fine, within a tefach, Abaye says, I agree. Rabbi Yossi would call that negeya because you're within a tefach. I disagree with your concept, Rava, that you're saying even if it's above a tefach, that it should be considered negeya by him being the oil. You don't have to say that. You don't have to say Rabbi Yossi is talking about that thing.
He couldn't prove that.
Right. Right. So that's because you could argue that ropes are different than Glenn Paul's. The question, though, is the kehevi ketumah tmuna bekasva oila. In that case, then, if we're talking about that the ropes are within a tefach of the mess, the ropes are not bottled to the mess, but you should have, it should be considered tumah tmuna, which is another name for tumah ritzutza, where it's squeezed in a space less than a tefach by a tefach by a tefach, and therefore it should be bekasva oila. So the tumah should spread upward, and therefore, when the person leans over or touches it, puts his finger or whatever above it, he should be tummy either way. Why are we saying that if he's touching the ropes, he's tahor?
That's what I was asking.
Okay. But the answer is tumah tmuna in a bekas. You know what? Rabbi Yossi would hold that tumah tmuna is not bekas. It does not pierce through and go all the way straight up and down. Now, Rashi earlier in the sugya mentions that this concept of tumah bekas va'ola is halacha l'moshe mesinai. Halacha l'moshe mesinai isn't something that you can argue with. So Gurion Ashas, Rabbi Akiva Eger over here references a Tosfos in Eruvin, which talks about this, and they don't directly ask the question about Halacha l'moshe mesinai. They ask based on a different Gemara. They say Rabbi Yossi would agree the concept of tumah bekas va'ola applies to an entire kever. If you have an entire kever where you don't have a space of a tefach, an empty space of a tefach above it, then yeah, tumah bekas va'ola. Rabbi Yossi will agree to that. He will just say that doesn't apply to something that's not a complete kever. Over here, you're talking about a mess outdoors, or you're talking about a kezias of a mess or whatever. So then he would say that the concept of tumah bekas va'ola, bekas v'yeres, is only limited to the case of a kever.
covered with some.
So therefore, so if you have a person is buried in a kaver and there's no cholol tefach, there's no empty space of a tefach above the kaver, then yeah, anybody who goes directly above that kaver is going to become tummy no matter how high up they are. But if we're talking about a mess outdoors, or we're talking about a kazayis of a mess, Rav Yossi would disagree with the concept of kaswa. Okay, so therefore, so even if the ropes are within a tefach of the person, no problem. Rav Yossi would say that the truma doesn't go higher than him. So where do you get that? Where do you get that concept that Rav Yossi holds like that? That tumor is not bekaswa, when it's tumor, etc.
That's according to...
We're asking, how do we see that? Rav Yossi holds that. This is still Abaye talking. Ditznan, because we learn in a Mishnah in Olos. So far, we've had an Arperik, we've had a Gemara on Uksin, we've had a Gemara on Kalim, and now we have a Gemara on Olos. So Tevis, and I told you, this Perik is like a Gemara on Seder Taurus. Yeah. Okay, so Tevis Hamigdol Shiyash B'Paseach Tefach, and the Mishnah says, if you have a wooden cabinet, Tevis Migdol actually means a little compartment, a compartment in a cabinet. So you have a large wooden cabinet, and it's divided into different compartments by shelves or whatever. So a compartment in a cabinet, Shiyash B'Paseach Tefach, where the compartment itself is at least a tefach by a tefach by a tefach, the Ein B'Tzi'osa Paseach Tefach, but the hole to put things in or take things out of it is less than a tefach in size. You're talking like let's say, for example, like a safe deposit box, say, for example. So it's got the inside of it is at least a tefach by tefach by tefach, but you have a small hole in the front of it that you reach in to put things in and take things out, and that hole is smaller than a tefach. Truma b'socha, so the din would be like this. If you have truma's mess again, we're talking about, inside that compartment, habayis tome, then the house will be tome, even though the hole is less than a tefach, nevertheless, the truma is able to go through it. Truma b'bayis, for us, we're going to see in a second, truma b'bayis masha b'socha tohar. On the other hand, if there's truma elsewhere in the house, then whatever is inside that compartment stays tohar. And the reason is, mepnei sh'derach truma lotzeis, ve'en derach truma likonis. Because we have a concept that comes up over and over again in Mishnayis Olas, that the way of Tumah is to go out, not to go in. In other words, what's going to happen with this mess that's in, what's going to happen with this piece of the mess that's inside this compartment? Eventually, you're going to take it out from there and bring it out through the house and bury it. So therefore, in other words, the normal way of the Tumah, therefore, is to spread outward, but not inward. You're not going to say, because there's Tumah in the house, therefore, what's inside the compartment should be Tumah, because the Tumah is not expected to go into that compartment ever. So if you had a hole there the size of a tefach, yeah, the Tumah could go in, but you don't, so therefore, not. Rav Yossi Matahar, but Rav Yossi says that no, the house will be Tahar, because not necessarily is it going to be Derech Tumah Lofi. Mipnei sheyachol hu lohitzia l'chatzoyin. First of all, he doesn't have to take out the whole kazayis at one time. He could break it into pieces and take them out less than a kazayis at a time. So not necessarily is the derech of the tumah to go all together into the house. Or another possibility is he could burn it right there in the compartment where it is. Now, how are you burning a piece of a mess? Since when are you allowed to burn a mess? So the Mishnah Lamelech at the end of Hilchos Ovel says maybe what it is maybe the concept that you're not allowed to burn a mess only applies to a whole mess. Here we're talking about one individual kazayis. Maybe there's no issue on burning it. Anyway, the point is, so the katani sefer. So now that was the first part of the Mishnah. Then the Mishnah continues. Hamidava Pesach. If you put this cabinet in the doorway, so the whole cabinet is in the house, but the opening of it is towards the outside. The door of the cabinet and all the compartments in is facing towards the outside, right? Tumah b'socha. Then if there's tumah inside the cabinet, habayis tohar. Then the house is tohar because there's no tumas oihel or there's no nothing, and the tumah is not going to go backwards into the house because the normal thing would be for the tumah to spread outwards. Tumah b'bayis masha b'socha tohar. And if there's tumah in the house, what's inside the cabinet is going to be tohar for the same reason. V'toni Allah, and we learn in a braisa on that. Rav Yossi matahar. That Rav Yossi says it's tohar. So the question is, first we have to figure out, Aheya, which part of the Mishnah is Rav Yossi talking about when he says it's Tohar? Ilema Asefa, are you telling me Rav Yossi is talking about the Sefa? You don't need Rav Yossi to tell that. Tanakama Nami Tahuri Komatar. Tanakama is also saying it's Tohar in the last case. Elo Dekama Tanakama Tumah B'Socha Abayis Tomei. So it must be talking about the case, must be talking about where the Tanakama said in the previous case, where the cabinet was inside the house, that if there's a tumma inside this compartment, then the house becomes tumma, because derech tumma lotzis. So
when it says in a sefer,
even when there's less than a tefach hole, as long as the compartment itself is at least a tefach by a tefach. So e mishum de derech tumah lase. So either the reason is because either the tumah normally goes out, so even if there's a hole less than a tefach, the e mishum de tumah tmuna bekas, or the Tanakhama would say another possibility could be that the compartment was less itself was less than a tefach in size, and therefore tumah bekas va'ola, the tumah would spread up directly from the compartment and go straight up through the cabinet and then be metame in the house.
Because the
compartment is less than a tefach by tefach, it's tumah ritzutza. Ve'ka'omalei Rav Yosi, and then Rav Yosi says to the Tanakhama, "Dikam derech tumah lo," says, if you're telling me that it's a case where the compartment is a tefach by a tefach and the hole is less than a tefach, and you're telling me that derech tumah lo, I disagree because Yochel Huloi feel like a sewing of the sofa b'mkoma. Because not necessarily is the house going to become tummy, because you could take it out piecemeal or you could burn it there and therefore the tumor never goes into the house. Or the ka'am, tumor tumor. You could stick in a match. You're going to tell me the other possibility is, let's say the compartment itself is less than a tefach by a tefach by a tefach. You're telling me in that case the whole house is going to be tamei because the tumah spread directly upward from the compartment. Rabbi Yossi would say, I disagree, tumah tumah ain't a bekas. It doesn't do that. So that is where Abaye says, that is where we see that Rabbi Yossi holds of that concept that tumah tumah is not bekas. It's not bekas, so it doesn't spread out. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi would say, again, if the compartment is a tefach by a tefach by a tefach, then the tumah is confined in there anyway. You, Tanakhama, are telling me it'll go out through the small hole. I disagree with that. It's not necessarily was it ever going to go out from there into the house. As far as the case, what if the compartment itself is less than a tefach by a tefach by a tefach? Tanakhama would say it's tumah ritzutza. Therefore, it goes directly up through the top of the cabinet and spreads out to the house. And Rabbi Yossi says it doesn't. It stays where it is. So therefore, the house isn't coming in that case. So he doesn't believe that tumah ritzutza is bekas va'ola, which is what Abaye was out to prove him here.
Okay. So he doesn't believe in tumah ritzutza.
So he doesn't believe, he believes tumah to a certain extent, but not to that particular detail. Not bekas va'ola. Okay, to be continued tomorrow, basically.